Thank you for joining us for Be Our Geek, where everyone is a geek about something and where we cover your pop culture landscape through our geek lens. I'm Ms. Shannon, and we appreciate you joining us. We're broadcasting again from the Twin Cities Film Fest studio, and as always, I'm joined by my good friend and our co-host, Jayton Satia.
What up, homie?
Hey, I'm glad that you are still surviving. I know that we are in full swing getting ready for the lovely Twin Cities Film Fest events that are starting very, very soon.
Oh, they're going to be here sooner than I hoped and wished they would be here, but this is that...
Do you have anxiety medication? Because I think I need it right now.
I do. I also have some homeopathic options that we can have for you.
Which I think my wife would rather have me take.
Yeah, so we'll give you some options. Yeah. We'll give you some options.
But I mean, this happens every year.
Right.
Where we get a little anxious. Mm-hmm. We, as in like mostly me and my staff. Our gala's coming up in a couple weeks.
Yes.
Our festival's coming up in a couple months.
Right.
And as you know, and we'll kind of hint at this later, but I'm planning something very special between the gala and the festival as well, which is kind of giving me a little bit of anxiety as well.
Because what we've learned about Jayton is he just loves to take on additional projects.
I'm masochist.
That's it, yes.
I like personal challenges. That's kind of, and I've done like a 30-day workout challenge.
Right.
I've done more mental challenges where I've done like a watery thing, where
yes.
just a water diet, so I only drank water for like 96 hours.
And your challenges are normally only dangerous to you.
They're self-inflicting as opposed to outward facing.
Yes. Yeah.
No, I'm a masochist. But this thing that I'm planning after the gala, before the festival, is, again, more self-inflicting, but the beneficiary will be the film festival.
Okay, which is always perfect. So we encourage people always to go and get more information about the Twin Cities Film Fest by going to twincitiesfilmfest.org. And I have an outstanding movie topic that I want to talk to you about today.
Sure.
And we are, of course, going to be joined by our guest geek again. And this week we are going to talk to our guest geek, who is a food scientist.
Yeah.
Yes. So we're going to drop some knowledge. Yes. MJ Kinney is going to be here very soon to talk to us about some food scientist language. And what I thought would be fun, because since she's so scientific in nature about the way that she thinks about food, what I wanted to bring in is I brought in a very non-scientific thing about food. I brought in the brand new, hot off the presses, 2018 official new foods guide for the Minnesota State Fair.
Whoa.
Yeah, so I'm very excited to see what she thinks about some
of
the new foods.
You literally just handed, as you're talking, you just handed me this piece of paper.
Yes.
Which is, I thought it would be one piece. I mean, it's just like a five
correct
pages of like... I suppose good food them, but
yeah,
like,
new foods where you can find them at our Minnesota State Fair.
Like, what is an up north puff pastry?
And we are going to cover that. So I want to see some things. If there's anything on there that you think that you will love, and if there's anything that really scares our food scientist MJ Kinney, that's going to be on the show this week. But before we get to our guest geek, okay, Jayton, I want to talk to you because you are our film geek. As the executive director of the Twin Cities Film Fest, I'm sure that you are all abuzz with all of the changes that are going on over at the Academy Awards. Yes, yes.
The Oscars.
Yes, you know, since we are very, very excited about the pageantry, we're coming up on our 91st Academy Awards. And so they did reveal a series of changes that are going to come in to play. And there's three in particular that I think have some major implications. And so you can tell me whether these make sense. So they're changing some of the things that they're doing. They're going to make sure that they shorten the telecast. So that is going to happen. They have a firm three-hour.
Yeah,
a firm three-hour shortening of the ceremony. And then they are also going to set an earlier date for the ceremony itself. So they're moving it up. And lastly, they have added in a new category, and that is Outstanding Achievement in a Popular Film. And this is the first time. You're already rolling your eyes, Jayton. You're already rolling your eyes. This is the first time the new category has been announced since 2001, when that's when they added in Best Animated Feature into that thing. So what do you think of Best?
I appreciated the Best Animated Feature.
Okay. You were excited
this
about that.
This is an
one.
Audience award.
Yes, it is. It's like turning into the Teen Choice Awards. You're not on board with that?
They need ratings. I think this
right,
is a
they
rating,
do.
This is a rating ploy.
It is a ratings ploy,
and
so is shortening it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but shortening, I don't think it's going to work, right? I just don't think they have so much to add. They've always thought about shortening it. They've always talked about this is too long, this is right. too long. Networks talk about it. Local networks talk about this is too long, this is too long. And it always runs over at least by half hour, if not 45 minutes.
Well, they are talking about even having more pre-recorded and non-televised segments. So they're saying that that is going to happen more at this point. So I think we'll see less of the... Okay, you won some Lifetime Achievement Award. We're going to cut all of your opportunity to speak live on television out, and we'll have more of that.
So you saw Black Panther.
Correct.
So is this fortunate that this is happening during the Black Panther year?
I think this whole category was created to be able to make Black Panther have an Academy Award.
But why can't Black Panther just be the best picture?
It could, but I doubt they're going to do that because
why
so
not?
Far
this okay. is what the problem is.
You're
this
saying that we should change the Academy adding in another popular category isn't enough. It's that they should change their methodology in the way that they.
It's the curation of it.
Correct.
Right. It's the decision behind nominations that needs to get tweaked as opposed to creating new categories. Again, you create new categories, you can create genre categories.
Right.
Right. Like the best new genre. And right. then you can go down that path. I just think this is absurd. Like, you need to look at what you need to fix first before adding more things to it, because right. this is going to come back with more criticism.
Right.
Why is this? So let's just, why did Skyscraper get nominated for the best popular category?
Well, now what I did understand, and there's
not that I will, I'm just saying.
Yeah, they're kicking around lots of ideas about what could actually happen in the criteria that they should use when they're picking this new category, best popular or achievement in popular film. So it is still supposed to be the best of the popular films. So there's going to have to be some monetary caps that, you know, they'd really, you know, and I'm looking at that and going, well, this now definitely looks at what do we do with our streaming services? How do those things work out? Because if we're looking at it from how much money does a film make or how many people viewed it, since things like Netflix historically don't like to tell us how many views we had on things, how are they going to be involved in this category? So now we're back to how much money and how, and we're voting with our dollars on these movies.
No, absolutely. Again, you bring up on demand. Sure. Mm-hmm. Will there be an on demand category?
Maybe eventually.
Best Amazon Prime movie. Best Hulu original TV show.
Well, don't you think that this is very similar to when they went from, okay, we obviously need to broaden the scope of these and try and pick films that are broader in scope. So that's why they ended up going from
five to ten. Yes.
Right. So now they're like, look, a lot of things.
It could be nine, it could be eight.
right.
But then they also don't broaden the directors.
Correct.
Right. We always come back to like, you have 10 films, but none of those 10 films, like directors are part of the conversation. Like you're giving this particular film the best film, but you're not giving any nod to the director.
Right.
It's a team effort. So why are you constricting and not growing the other categories? You know, why are there only best five actors or best five actresses? Then you go down the path of like, is actor and actresses, should they be just best performance?
Right.
And period. And so it's actors and actresses.
And I think a lot of people would like us to get to that point, but we're not necessarily to that point
no,
as
we're here
a
to
society
add
yet. Yes. And I do think it's interesting because when you come back to, you brought up Black Panther already, which we know that they are already vying for getting attention. And usually our popular films, the only time that we see them mentioned is usually for something like best sound editing.
Correct.
Or the
cinematography,
or outstanding costumes, makeup.
Exactly.
You know, all of the special effects.
All well deserved,
but
right? I mean, they do put a lot of effort into
and
that.
And I applaud all of those people that put in all that effort. But doesn't it also make you think, if we're trying to shorten it, those are also the categories that we know kill ratings. I love to see all this amazing special effects. Like, most of the films that I am a big fan of is because they have great special effects. But do I want to hear the person who is in charge of those special effects give a speech and thank their mother / wife / kids for letting them do it?
No.
No. Right?
No.
And that sounds terrible.
Nothing against them.
But you don't want to hear them speak.
They deserve the awards that they
yes.
get. They deserve the recognitions that they are due.
And I want the film to be able to put up a little byline that says that it is best. It has an Academy Award, and it's won all these.
Well, I mean, post things. Academy Awards, if it got any recognition, any kind of future marketing that goes along with it should absolutely recognize why this particular film deserves your attention,
right.
Your dollars, your on-demand views, is because it's gotten Academy Awards for the listed categories.
Right.
Just because you know what you're going to walk into. But that being said, no, I don't want to know who the best production coordinator grip person is. I'm sure they did an amazing job and
right.
Nothing against them. Again, I work in independent films.
Exactly.
So those people make the film happen. But again, you're going down the path of this is an entire 24-hour run program then. Like
right.
Oscars at that point will just become 24-hour live cast. You can, you know, tune in whenever you want.
Right. Which might be a good option. You know, just kind of just stream it for.
Yeah, what could be a great, like, on-demand stream kind of an option.
You can watch the little, you can pop through as you choose.
Yes.
I do think it's interesting, though, because if you're right, we are opening up for more controversy. Because if we have best popular film, so let's say now we are really encouraging people, okay, this is what you voted for with your dollars. But it can't just be, okay, this one made the most money. You know, it's like, so how do we do it? Do we have to change? You know, okay, this movie's popular, but it came out really late in the season, so we have to go. Do you get more credit if you make a ton of money the opening weekend versus if it made more money over time?
Yeah, how much did it do in the box office in your fantasy league and the movie league?
Right.
You know, again, typically at an Oscar, if you're up for an awards, you're doing a typical release late fall.
Right.
Late summer, early fall is kind of when the film's distributors are putting their content out there because the blockbusters are done for the summer.
Right.
They got to shift attention to the award season. Now we're going to push out your Moonlights and your La La Lands and all those amazing films.
Mm-hmm.
But films that still could be amazing in those categories, like a Black Panther, get released in February.
Right.
You know, there's amazing film. The Get Out got released super early last year.
Yes.
And again, it made the qualification because it was a good movie.
Right.
So there's a little bit of that indie push that could easily happen earlier in the year. And I think those films they deserve to be in the contention for come the fall.
But so many of these movies, if you start adding into, like, even the indie films, so many of them, it's all still based upon how you market in order to get a nomination.
Correct.
Academy Awards.
It's millions and millions and millions of dollars that get put into the backstream dollar revenue for Oscar nomination and pitching and dinners. And
right.
You mean stars talk about how that actually is more work than the actual movie. It's
right.
Actually shaking hands with the Hollywood Foreign Press and the Film Academy members. And not that they don't want to. They, of course, they're up there for an award that is the most coveted in their industry.
Right.
They don't mind doing it, but it becomes work. It
right.
becomes like a job. But there is a whole, you know, dollars and cents in actually marketing your movie. So then your little indie films that deserve it, like Lady Bird.
Yes.
You know, does well, but it can't compete against A Shape of Water that's coming in from, you know, a different studio.
Right. And I'm also impressed now. I feel like we're already going, okay, this category was made because they know that they should give props to Black Panther. But remember,
you should just call it the Black
Panther. Black Panther. The Black Panther. The award for best Black Panther film. But remember that Ryan Coogler, he's, you know, when they asked him to be part of the Academy, he declined.
Yes.
And then counter-programmed and threw a fundraiser the same night.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to see if he does decide to opt into this, or if he goes, no, you're just pandering, and I'm still not on board with the way that you guys do stuff. Because you just, instead of really looking at us the way that he believes that he should be looked at, I feel like that he might tap out as well.
So do you think if the Academy said, we're going to scrap this new category, or they keep the category, but then they put Black Panther in the actual best picture,
right.
He'd be more open to that?
Probably.
I think so, too.
Right.
And I think he may actually retract the film if they put it in the best popular film.
Yeah, he might go,
I
don't want your made-up statues.
That actually gives credibility to the content and what that movie was truly about.
Right.
you know, it wasn't just about, I mean, yes, of course it was Marvel. Yes, of course it was superhero, but it was much more about.
So here's what you would like in your fantasy land. Because one, we already need to make room.
We do live in my fantasy
land. Right, yeah. So we're going to go back to Jayton's fantasy land. So we already know that you need to make room on your ballot because it doesn't look like right now they're going to retract this category. But what we would like to do is for them to go ahead and put the category out there and then all of the pictures that are nominated for it decide to opt out as protest.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
If Mamma Mia is like, I'm done. If Mamma Mia 2 is like, no. No, yeah. We do not want your award.
Like, no. Mamma Mia would, because Meryl Streep's in it. Meryl says it happens, it happens. So,
right.
No, is that going to happen? No, it's not going to happen. Now, I'm very curious as to what the Academy decides as the best popular films.
Right.
I'm very interested in knowing the first ever iteration of the nominees in this category.
Right.
I'll start my own internal list of who I think would possibly go into that.
Like, right.
Would the Avengers go in it?
Yes.
Right? Like, is it basically a Marvel category
right.
at this point?
They're like, we know people like your movies, but we kind of think they're garbage.
Right.
So, like,
yeah, you basically keep our industry afloat with all the dollars that you bring in. So, yeah.
But you make popcorn.
Which is fine, too. But that's just my two cents. We'll see. I mean, I have to live with it. But
all right.
And again, I'm not an Academy member, so it's not like I can actually go in there and voice my opinion.
But you
although
can
I should be. If somebody's listening, I'm an East Indian man who started our own film festival.
And now it's coming up on their 10th year.
And,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm very much open to an offer.
We will have to continue the marketing for that. I know we don't have that big budget right there, but I'll throw you $20 to try and get you involved in the Academy.
Can you please make it 25?
Yeah, I got you.
Great.
I got cool. you.
Yes, you
should. I cut down on my
incremental value. Increases.
I cut down on my Starbucks budget, so I'm all good.
Aww.
So you may have it.
Thanks.
All right, Jayton, you are my friend. And we are going to be joined by our guest geek, MJ Kinney. We are going to talk to her about what it means to be a food scientist and also.
So I should not go on my cleanse right now. I should wait after the state fair.
Because she probably has some suggestions. And then we are also going to cover some of our favorite and least favorite 2018 Minnesota State Fair food suggestions here on Be Our Geek. Welcome back to Be Our Geek, broadcasting from the Twin Cities Film Fest studios. I'm Ms. Shannon. Jayton Satia is here. And Jayton, it is now time to bring to the microphone this week's guest geek. And you're going to love this one because we like it when people who are smarter than us about very specific topics come into the room. Like, we know lots about comic books and movies, but sometimes you need to talk to people that know things about that's going to help you in real life, right?
Yeah, and I'm fascinated by this particular, first and foremost, category in the industry.
Like, right.
There's so much happening in this industry right now that I think we need a little truth bombs to be dropped on us right now.
Right, and so bringing in the truth bombs, our guest geek this week is MJ Kinney, our food scientist guest geek. Hello. Hello.
Hello. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So we really appreciate you, and we took some time going to the website. So your website is fairscience.com, and that's fair, F-A-R-E, fairscience.com. Okay. And you have lots of great tips, tricks, and just tell everybody a little bit about what it means to be a food scientist and what you do on your website.
Yeah, sure thing. So I really like that you emphasize the spelling of FARE.
Yes.
So F-A-R-E being FARE, a synonym of food.
Mm-hmm.
Foodscience.com was already taken, and I also didn't want it. But FARE also come to find out after doing a Google search means free and open to the public. So I wanted to create a platform that would be approachable to the general public on the topic of food science or the topic of food.
Right.
There are so many, as you know, conspiracy theories out there,
right.
Discrepancies, conflicts of interest, and people, I want them to have the platform to go on to my blog, read about things in the food industry, understand it from a food science perspective, and then feel free to put in their questions and, you know, feedback.
So tell us a little bit about your background. Like, when you were growing up as a young person, where you sit there and go, you know what, I'm going to be a food scientist one day.
I was pretty certain I was going to be like a vet because
okay.
I was obsessed with my cat, which is funny and very timely because I recently became a cat mom, my first pet in the adult
welcome
world.
Welcome to the fold.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I spent way too much time that I'm willing to admit, like, researching cat food. litter boxes.
But well, there's a lot of varieties.
There are. Mm-hmm. But in bringing it back to food science, when I was a kid, I think the closest thing that came to food was my alphabet cookbook.
Okay.
And I think that made me kind of like a punny person. When I went into my field, I wore the food scientist hat, and then I wore the technical sales hat, and then I wore this marketing hat.
Right.
And people were just getting a kick out of when I first entered the industry, I was working for a pea protein manufacturer.
Yes.
There are a ton of puns to be had with the word pea.
Is there
oh,
really?
Oh, my goodness. Okay. My signature was happy, whatever the day of the week was, and it'd be like H-A-P-P.
Good thing right. My four-year-old
right?
Is
here. Yeah. So I think like the alphabet cookbook, while it was like an introductory to making food for myself, it was also like, you know, kind of like this punny like play on words.
Right.
But that play on words is very helpful because it gets people fascinated or interested.
Absolutely. The conversation going.
Pull them in a little bit.
And you do really make sure that you talk about different functional ways that people can get more involved with how their food is created, where it comes from, and just get a little closer to it. Because it does seem like, from your perspective, MJ, that so much of what we do is so distanced from what we actually eat.
Yeah. The topic of transparency, I think, mm-hmm. is bigger now than it ever has been.
Right.
And so really understanding where your food comes from while we're getting there, I think in the mind of any food scientist, specifically in the field of quality assurance, and there are so many little divisions within the field of food science, but people in quality are looking at it and they're like, we'll never really hone in or own transparency because
right.
suddenly you're talking about where does this one ingredient grow?
Yes.
Where is it manufactured? Where is it packaged? These sometimes occur at all different facilities.
Right.
Is there a conflict of interest for you when you're talking about where it's grown, where it's manufactured, where it's processed with companies that are out there producing these items? And as a food scientist, are you more aware of, you know, walking that line of not pissing off anybody or any specific company or any mm-hmm. specific...
Is there a big brother out there looking for you in the food scientist industry?
Right? I mean, you want to be as transparent as possible, yet also not necessarily kill your own career, but mm-hmm. want to be truthful, yet also be respectful
right.
as well. So is that something you're dealing with? Or?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think before I started blogging, I mean, there were so many things that I wanted to talk about. And there were so many things I was like, you know, if I ever said this in the wrong way, it could piss off a lot of people.
Right.
But I also believe that if you ever want to attract attention to yourself and your message, you have to go against the grain a little bit.
Right.
And maybe even a lot of it. So as far as potentially pissing people off, I think it would be maybe in this area where people just don't know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly you bring that area to their attention. They're like, oh, I never thought about that.
You bring the spotlight back on and then have an actual dialogue behind it. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it's for me, it's so I would say, my wife is here, she would concur, but we're majority of our household food that we bring in is organic and or certified and or we know exactly where it comes from. So it's that transparency. How much education is required still in the minds of just individual households? Obviously, income has a lot to do with it. You know, your social upbringing has a lot to do with it. Your culture has a lot to do with
right.
it. I'm Indian. I was born in India. So now I'm trying to shift my mom into more of that conscious effort on even, yes, of course, it comes from the Indian grocery store, but where was it actually made?
Right.
So I think she's appreciative of knowing that I care. And that's what I want to ingest. So I think she's changing the way she's cooking food as well, which mm-hmm. is great. But those, I mean, that's been a years in the making as opposed to, hey, mom, just do this.
Right.
So talk about the conversations that you as a food scientist would like to have and then making that impact, knowing that there are all these other things to be considered
right.
in changing somebody's habit.
Sure. That was very loaded. There's a lot there.
Okay.
So I'm going to unpack it. No.
That's
no
Jake and MJ.
I loved it. I loved it.
Start unpacking.
So I'm going to start unpacking. Well, I think I want to start off with an example. So an example being when a consumer goes shopping and they want to purchase the best possible thing, they look at the certifications and the logos on the package. And
right.
I think it's gotten to an extent now where it's overwhelming.
Okay.
And also provide some misinformation, you know, because something has a gluten-free symbol on it, does that necessarily mean that it's healthy for that individual? You know, now we
right.
can say, true, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's healthy for that individual or that it's even necessary, but it is for a lot of individuals.
Right.
However, when you look at marketing data, for some companies, it's enough to say, hey, we saw that this sector in gluten-free really experience a lot of growth. So we're going to just put gluten-free on our product because
especially when it's
is.
Something, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was something that was already technically gluten-free. Mm-hmm. And now they're going, we're reminding you because people are going, oh, they think that I'll lose weight or I'll do this and things that are not completely, that are completely unrelated to the reason why it needs that label.
Right. So I always say, like, one man's food is another man's poison.
Right.
So I've been gluten-free for now 10 years before it was popular. I don't do this for the attention. My life was very difficult in the beginning. There were very few options available
right.
at the grocery store level. And I just formed some understandings. Like, I was no longer going to be able to eat bread or pizza or cereal. You know, like,
right.
it was a very sad, depressing time.
Yes.
But I got through it. I'm stronger because of it.
Right.
But now I look at all these options and I'm like, these kids are so spoiled.
Right.
They don't even know how good they got it.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
And I'm really grateful for the way that the market has evolved.
Right.
Because if I had become a food scientist or entered the industry 5 years ago, I totally would not have been embraced with open arms. You know?
Mm-hmm.
They would have been like,
so do you still enjoy your food though, right?
I mean, I do.
That's the key component of any education is like, look, you can still enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
There's just different ways to actually consciously look at food.
Right. And you really look at things from a lifestyle perspective, right, MJ?
Yeah, I don't think that anything really has much value unless you can incorporate it into your lifestyle until you can make it realistic for you. Now, there are some things out there that people would argue are not realistic, like maybe the conversation behind clean meat or clean proteins.
Right.
But the point is to make those options available in the future and therefore realistic.
Right.
So it all starts with a very grand idea. And then
so the grand idea of, you know, manufacturing protein in mm-hmm. warehouses or in green rooms, what are your thoughts on the future, the way it looks? You know, because now there's grow houses, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can grow your own meat, or not your own meat, but companies are actually looking at sustainability through that model.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's in the infancy stage, but as you look at the next frontier of food science, you brought up clean protein. Where do you think is it heading in the right direction, or at least heading in the direction where you think it would actually be, not even just sustainable from just this nature standpoint, obviously climate change and whatnot, but even our own health? Is that even something that you're thinking about?
Oh, I think we're totally headed in the right direction, and I'm very grateful to be alive in this day and age. I mean, I'm just grateful to have things like Amazon, right? That alone is like, wow, it's so good to be alive. But when I look at my industry, I'm like, wow, it's really headed in the right direction. And just think about kind of like the history of food, right? Like, once upon a time, we had our own farms, or a great majority of the American population did. We're self-sufficient in many ways, bartered for our other goods. And then somebody wanted to start a business, right?
Right.
And they're like, how do I possibly sell a product that people already know how to make themselves? Because people really didn't care much for their time in relation to how we are today.
Right.
In relation to how we are today, you know, we have calendars that we monitor 1 to 2 weeks in advance, right? But, you know, so I think, like, I used to have this mindset that some of these companies were almost evil for inventing certain products and making them available to the public, almost as if they knew how bad the effects were on people's health, right?
Right.
But that's not necessarily the case. It could also be that they had no idea how to make a Snickers bar.
Sure. Right.
And then one day this magical treat showed up and people were willing to buy it because they're like, I have no idea how to make something like
this. And I don't
like
want to make it. It's available.
It's available.
Right.
Oh, and it's affordable. It tastes great. So the conversation of food is really just one that's, it continues to evolve and change as we gather more information. So maybe there were enough Snicker bars, among other products like Doritos, that made it into our everyday lifestyle that it was like, you know, we've got a problem and we're seeing this problem emerge in the form of obesity or type 1 and type 2 diabetes. And so now the conversation on food is about functional foods.
But right.
Just 5 or not even years ago, it was about low fat, low sugar, and not so much low sugar. I would say low fat, low carb.
Right.
And so we're trying to figure out what is the black and white solid fact here of what's going to be good for my health. And
right.
I wanted to just tell everybody that one man's food is another man's poison. So what could be right for you is not right for me.
Right.
I don't know if you are like gluten sensitive or gluten intolerant by any means. Are you? By chance?
I am not, but my son, because he's on the spectrum, it does, you know, I have isolated as much of the gluten and dairy out of his diet because I noticed that it did help him with his behavior. So I knew he had more of a sensitivity versus an allergy, you know, to something like that. So I'm like, no, I do notice a difference. So I know that it's still important to figure those things out.
Right. And so that would be a perfect example of your son's food, you know, is great for him and it could be great for you, but your food could be his poison.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that's
so do you recommend people like doing like elimination diets where you just, you know, you don't know if you're sensitive to something or how it actually adversely affects your body or if it doesn't, but you just eliminate it from your diet for like a month or something just to see?
Or is it better for them to actually go to like a neuropathic doctor and
what
get tested to see if they're sensitive?
How do I, like, I don't know what I don't know. So for you to say one man's food could be your poison, how do I know that?
Right. Well, I guess if you really wanted to know it, you could see your doctor, get some blood work done, and then have an official allergy test. But in my experience, what happened for me was I was in college, and I was, of course, very busy and studying, and my diet at the time was like a box of cheddar bunnies a day. It was so bad, you know, but it was just like this snack that was convenient. And this is just as I was like coming to the conclusion that
they
there was
made
something.
It and it tasted
and you're like,
very,
listen,
seriously
you're like, these are the organic ones too. It's like, yeah, because you do trick yourself into thinking that things are good for you because you're like, well, it's not the regular over the counter ones. You know, these are the specialty ones over here in the nice section.
That's right. And actually at the time, I remember seeing like the marketing on that product was 70% organic ingredients. And I mean, even as a food science major, I didn't really fully understand why organic was necessarily better than conventional. It's just a part of the story. At the very least, you know that you're happy to support organic farming and more sustainable farming methods, right? But what does that mean for your health? So for me, I, by the suggestion of my sister, thank goodness, she had said, why don't you just try going off of wheat for 5 days? And see what happens. And of course, it was very hard day one and two. Day three, you're like, oh, I can power through for 2 more days.
Right.
And 5 days off, and then you introduce it to yourself, you may realize that you have a problem.
Right.
And
absolutely.
So, yeah, for me, it was very, very obvious. And so it was me slowly but surely cutting wheat and other grains that contained gluten out of my diet. And 10 years later, here I am. And I have options. I mean, it is hard for me to eat out. And I used to get very, like, anxious and angry with my circumstances because if you're out all day running errands, you're like, I can't find a gluten-free option. I'm going to starve. Not really in the first world country that we live in, but
but
like,
now I'm hangry.
Yeah, and now I'm hangry. Mm-hmm. So if anyone has that story, you know, as well, I would just say view it as an opportunity to fast.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, I could be hangry or I'm just fasting.
Yeah, so it's all just changing your framework and the way you think about it.
So do you get hangry or do you fast your state fair? Because you work at the state, you work at like you're gonna be at stations and I mean like
the what how my methodology with, like, through not... hanging out at the fair is I bring food and then I have days that I call them my cheat days, but I still don't get to go overboard because I just know that I can't sustain that activity level living on Minnesota State Fair foods. It's the same thing as I spend a lot of time working in bars, and I can't live on fried bar food. I just can't.
Or just drinking the whole day. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
I can't do that. I'm like, there's options there, but then once you kind of go, you know, this is not sustainable. If I want to make this my career, I can't do it. So I have found options, you know, that I could do and that are portable and, you know, the kind of protein bars that I'm willing to live on and things like that. And I take food with me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I do think that it's interesting that there are so many different options out there and how things do continually morph and change. And I always think the thing that I find is interesting about the food industry is things that I grew up with in the neighborhood that I grew up in that I consider like poor people food is what I call them, like the stuff that we used every part of the animal, like you kind of thing. And so now they're gourmet, you know, kind of thing. If you go someplace and you get oxtails, I'm like, my grandmother used oxtails and that was like, it was inexpensive. And now these things have become, you know, very expensive. Mm-hmm. Or I remember we had a pomegranate tree in our yard or bush, whatever you call it. So we had pomegranates all the time. So the fact that that's something so expensive now, it's so hard to fathom those kinds of things, you know, for me. But it's interesting watching things absorb. And I want to get more, because I know that you are very plant forward, right, MJ?
That you said plant forward.
Yes. Yeah, so you're very plant forward. But, you know, we did bring up protein. And so I wanted to bring up the new fad in protein. Yeah. So are you both familiar with the cricket farming that is going right now?
I'm not actually.
Oh, okay. So then I'll let MJ fill us in. But that's what to me, that's one of the new hotnesses in the protein world.
Yeah. I mean, it's been going on, I want to say, I've been aware of it for the past 5 years.
Okay.
So cricket protein or just insect protein, you look at insects and you say, hey, they have a pretty good source of protein. And
when you are like naked and afraid, you can use that.
So, I mean, I was personally curious about it, but the marketing message behind insect protein was comparing it to another animal form being, hey, instead of beef, chicken, or, you know, pork, why don't we substitute some of our protein needs with insects?
Because it goes back to your sustainability thing. We're like, okay, you need a lot less land, a lot less water, a lot less resources to farm this same crickets. Amount of protein in crickets.
And I was very curious about it. I'm not a fan of cricket or insect protein.
Have you tried it?
I have. But it's not so much the taste that bothers me whatsoever. I think that you can eat a lot of products and not even know what's in there. And,
right.
You know, you can disguise it with chocolate or yes. peanut butter, whatever yes. the case. But for me, when I look at insect protein, I did a little research project at the University of Florida with their School of Entomology. And I was just personally curious as a food scientist how to scale insect protein.
Okay.
And come to find out, crickets, among other insects, are cannibalistic. So when you put them in crowded conditions, they're not happy.
Okay.
They actually, like, tear each other apart.
Okay.
Spider farming is an example not to be utilized for protein, but to be utilized for silk.
Okay.
But when spiders are in crowded conditions and very stressed out, they attack each other. So I understand that it could be a way to prevent water pollution and be better to the environment in comparison to animal proteins. One of the obstacles being, will consumers eat it?
Right.
You know, when we have such a, if I see a cricket, I freak out. Do I want to eat that cricket? You know. But aside from that, I look at it and I say, this isn't a much better animal welfare story.
Right.
Because you're actually killing more lives
right.
to create the amount of protein that's equivalent to what you would need in a serving of beef, chicken, or pork, et cetera.
And back to your previous statement where we were talking about that transparency and things. I know that there's been a number of stories recently about the way that even our organic milk is created and how a lot of these smaller farms are now having, you know, troubles because now there's organic versions that are still the big box variety of dairies that are out there. So was that involved in the conversation of things that get mislabeled or how we think the things are transparent, but they're not really?
Right. So I'm going to bring up the field of quality assurance.
Okay.
When you look at food science, it's a very huge field. When my parents were like, what is food science? What are you doing? I was like, don't worry. When I graduate, I'll have lots of job opportunities, you know, available to me, which is true. You can go into, I decided to focus on research and development, product development, but you can go into quality assurance, which is really when you look into the food safety side, the manufacturing, making sure that when you're producing products to scale, that the products meet their parameters and specifications before they enter the market.
Okay.
And then within quality assurance, obviously, I said there's a food safety component. There's engineering that's associated with food science. And there are so many more that we'll get to. Sensory is another big field subfield within food science. But the quality assurance part is where you'll take a look at all of the verifications in place for the companies that you're working with, and you make sure that you check your T's and dot all your I's.
Right.
So this is maybe kind of like, you know, factor foe. When people look at small food companies and they want to get behind their mission, I would argue, not that small companies are bad whatsoever, but when you look at where the safest, most reliable food comes from, it actually comes from very large companies.
Okay.
So I want people to think of,
because they have the resources to
be
able to.
Yeah, that's right. They have the resources correct. Available to them. They also, when you are a company of that size, have maybe more to lose, or your
reputation's on the line.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You have your reputation. You have your lawsuits, right? So that if somebody does find a mistake or an error that you made, you can be held liable to that, and it could cost you a lot of money. Whereas small companies can fly under the radar and they might not necessarily have the resources or the professional expertise on their side to do the right thing.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But to answer your question, can there be food fraud? Absolutely. It's really big in seafood, actually.
Okay.
Fish fraud.
Yes.
this is like, how do you know that what you're eating is what it claims to be?
Right. Because they call it a haddock or a halibut or a pike or whatever it is. And I'm like, I don't know. It could all be the same fish.
I know what a salmon tastes like. But that,
you, think,
are,
you think
you know what a salmon tastes like. But there could be another fish out there. Who knows? That tastes and looks just like salmon.
Sure. Right.
But do you really know that it is?
Absolutely.
You know?
Well, yeah. If I didn't
or tuna
it,
or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
And so part of it's like, well, why does it matter? Well, if you're the consumer that believes that you're buying a certain product and it's not that what it claims to be, that's obviously a problem. But quality assurance is so huge because they're the ones that have to work with the suppliers and manufacturers in creating their product to make sure that those suppliers and manufacturers are upholding a true level of integrity,
right,
that they're creating and giving you a product that they say that it is.
So with all of this knowledge out there, MJ, why did you decide that your stance is more plant forward?
Well, I really had a great opportunity after college to work in R&D specific to plant proteins. And I'm very grateful for that opportunity because I had the hands-on application experience to say, oh, this is what plants can do.
Right.
And it was never anything that was discussed in my curriculum at school. It was everything that you had to learn outside of a textbook. It wasn't very well developed. In the food industry, we have standards of identity. There are things like that in any industry. But it's like, hey, milk is only this percent water, this percent the homogenized material,
right.
et cetera. But there weren't really any standards of identity or very many regulations behind plant protein. So it's still this very new space that people can enter. And all this creativity is yet to be had. So when I found out what you could do with plants, both on a nutritional story and like a taste story, like, hey, plants can taste good, but they can also deliver on all the nutrition that you need from a conventional animal-based diet, I thought it was kind of a sin to not talk about it more. I'm not a religious person.
But, right.
I'm just saying I felt the strong need to talk about it.
Well, we are talking to MJ Kinney, food scientist, and you can find her online at fairscience.com. That's FAREscience.com. And we've talked about a bunch of different types of food and things that we can put into our faces. And so I thought it would be fun for us to be able to go ahead and talk about some of the new foods available this year at the Minnesota State Fair. So I did give Jayton and MJ a list of the full list, but I have pulled a few of them that I thought would be interesting. And MJ, I'm very excited to see what you think about these new things. And if you would just run screaming, because some of them, mm-hmm. Or if you go, okay, you can have two bites of that. So we're talking, the broadest sense. Okay. I started kind of in the breakfast variety. So one of the new things that you can get this year at the Hamlin Church Dining Hall are Bananas Foster's French Toast. So it's a cinnamon swirl French toast topped with slices of fresh bananas and an orange rum flavored caramel sauce finished with a dollop of whipped cream. Are we on board with that being at the State Fair? Does that sound delicious or are you scared that they made it?
Well, I know that most people attend the State Fair and they eat the food there because it's supposed to be something ridiculous that they wouldn't otherwise create for themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a fun option.
Yes.
I think that flavor combination is wonderful.
Okay.
I personally wouldn't be able to consume it
because of the gluten.
Mm-hmm. But aside from being the gluten component, I want to have as much of a plant-forward diet as possible.
That's
a personal mission.
Yeah.
That's a personal mission. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's healthier. It's just now that I know what I know about plants and what they can do, I can't begin to unknow it.
Okay. All right. So we go. That's a borderline. What do you think, Jane? Does that sound delicious?
I'm going to take one bite.
You're going to take one bite. Okay.
That's just the way. I mean, that's it.
Okay. All right. So our next one, it starts with breakfast, but there are a lot of varieties for it. And it is the new Nordic waffle. It's Nordic waffles. They're going to be in the West End Market. So they have a variety of different waffles. And they have an all-day breakfast one that has egg, bacon, and cheddar. A berries and cream one. They also have one. We can go down here. They have a s'mores one. Salmon on a stick, so you can get some Norwegian salmon that is then shoved in your waffle. Then they have a turkey chipotle club. And finally, this one might be a little closer to what you would like, mm-hmm. MJ. They do have a vegetarian Viking. So that's black bean, veggie burger, cheddar cheese, mixed greens, and chipotle sauce. Is that a little closer, or is that hiding terribleness in it?
No, I'm not the person that's going to say that anything's hiding terribleness.
Okay.
That's not necessarily true.
Sometimes it is hiding terribleness.
I go to the grocery store, and like I start looking at a product package, and I'm like, you know what? I can't look at this anymore. It's making me angry.
I think I have a couple of those that might make you angry, but we're going to take a minute. Mm-hmm. So this next section, because I think it's great that you brought up seafood and where that kind of things go and whether fish is really the kind of fish we think it is. So a couple of the things that are added this year happen to be varieties of fish varieties. So we have the brand new ahi tuna poke bowl. So it has ahi tuna, avocado, mango, and pico de gallo tossed in a Hawaiian ginger soy sauce. So typical poke bowl stuff, kind of thing. You get that at Cafe Caribe. I like poke bowls.
Me too.
I don't know if I'm going to eat it at the fair.
I agree. I'm looking at, I'm thinking about in the past when I've gone to Hawaii, when I've mm-hmm. gone to L.A., when you're in coast cities mm-hmm. and you try, seafood definitely tastes different.
Right. Even if I'm in a restaurant where I know that the fish guys, our local guys here, brought the food
Correct.
In, I'm like, okay, and I'm sure the fish guys are the ones that are making this poke bowl that's going to be at the fair. Yeah. I just don't know if I trust eating.
Yeah, I'd rather have an alligator poke bowl at the State Fair than a tuna poke bowl.
Is that because it's cooked? versus like
yeah.
an
upset. Yeah.
It's going to be like, yeah. Right. Got
agreed.
It.
Yeah.
Then
yeah,
you might not be excited about the next thing that they have. They have a shrimp ceviche that's not available at the Shrimp Shack. That's fresh shrimp, which I'm like, what's fresh when you're at the Minnesota State Fair? It's not like they're going to have a tank. You know, mm-hmm. with fish.
Martha's cookies are fresh.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm like, fresh fish, I mean, fresh shrimp, not so much. But fresh shrimp, cucumbers, jalapenos, onions, all tossed in a citrus lime juice. Again, I think I'm a little scared of shrimp ceviche at the State Fair.
It wouldn't be something that I would take a bite of, but in previous years, I probably would have.
Okay.
So it's only very recently. I don't classify myself as vegan.
Okay.
But... I try not to eat anything that's animal-based anymore. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, I look at this menu, and I'm probably the worst person to present
You're
this
like,
menu
there's
to.
There's nothing in
I
here.
Have, no, I say, have something for her that's on the new fear. We're almost to it.
I look at this, and I say, well, this is a wonderful fasting opportunity.
But I got you, because I think that you might like this next one. So okay. French Metal Bakery is bringing a brand new thing, and it's actually even like registered trademark. They have Earth Wings this year. And Earth Wings are fresh cauliflower pieces dipped in a seasoned batter, deep fried, and smothered in organic sesame barbecue sauce. It's vegan and gluten-free.
That was the one I was looking at,
okay.
too. I was like,
I knew I found one for
Yeah,
me.
No, that is totally something that I would eat. And okay. I am so grateful to French Metal Bakery because they have always had gluten-free and vegan options available. I mean, not, I yes. don't know, always, but I think that's something that they are staple known for.
Right.
I've only lived in the Twin Cities for 2 years. But I remember when I was able to enjoy a piece of their coconut cake.
Right.
Because it was both those things. And I mean, at that point, you know, if you haven't had it for so long, you're
well,
almost in
as
tears.
A state fair isn't. Organization, mm-hmm. obviously they're for profit and whatnot, right? I mean, don't they have to now offer Earth Wings as consumer like
I
favorites?
Think that
like
we are, thing? Yeah, we are building out where they do want additional options, and everybody has already kind of said, you know, I can't live on cheese curds. I want to do other things at the fair. So I understand why they have continued to, because it used to be every year when we looked at the Minnesota State Fair menu, it was only deep fried things on a stick. Mm-hmm. And you do still have some of those really fun things that you're like, I don't even know if that's going to taste good. And we're going to get to
well,
a couple
of those.
Well,
now it's a marketing thing. Everything's right. on a stick.
Right. You know, and so to have some of these, no, this is all fine. You know, I'm good with it. You know, and so I think that's fun. Like, I think this next thing, I would try and eat this. We know that a lot of people are a big fan. If you go to the big corn booth, they have that. But now they have a different variety of that at Tejas Express. It's corn on. It's called wood grilled elote, and it's corn on the cob grilled over an oak wood fire, brushed with chili spiced mayo, and sprinkled with queso and fresh lime juice. What do we guys think of that? I think that's okay. I would give that a shot. I would eat that. You know, I would go. Maybe I would throw a little something extra on my corn.
That actually sounds. Pretty delicious.
Okay. I mean, and I think if, you know, I may not, if I was on a date, maybe I don't want to eat corn on the cob in front of people, but I'm at the fair. You're doing that anyway.
You're at the fair.
So I don't care. Take a toothpick with you and you'll be fine.
Some floss. Yeah.
So MJ, what do you think?
I'm sorry, I was so distracted by all these options. Right. Like, you know, you're reading it and you're like, how did anybody think of this?
Right.
Some of these ideas, but it was a corn on the cob. Mm-hmm. Okay. Got it. Yeah. With chili spice mayo. I mean, that is probably something that I would eat.
Okay.
It does have cheese. It does have mayo. But, okay, so when I look at these things, mm-hmm. I say, hey, you can make mayo plant-based, and you can make cheese plant-based.
Sure.
You know, so I'm ready just for it to happen and for it to become mainstream.
Ah, fair enough.
So you're saying you want to open up a little booth at the – you want to open up a little booth at the State Fair,
oh,
don't you?
Oh, I think it's far too late, but I probably should have worked on that.
You know,
like
no, you got time
ago.
Next year. We'll help you do it next year. Because okay. there's a lot of other things. Yeah, there's a lot of things that you would need. Like they have a turducken sausage sandwich that is coming up this year. That's one of the new things. And turducken is always a fancy thing. But I think all sausages are basically what turducken is. Because isn't most sausage, it's usually a combination of a bunch of things all ground up. So
has there ever been like a cricket thing? Or like that we talked about insect farming or whatever?
Well, you know what? Not at the fair, but my friend Tina Rexling from T-Rex Cookies, she has made, back to what MJ said about putting it in chocolate, she does have, it's called Chocolate Chirp. Available periodically over a T-Rex cookie. So it's, it's chocolate. It's basically a chocolate chip cookie with crickets in it. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't necessarily even know. Like whenever I do decide, like I took some to some friends of ours. I'm like, by the way, there's crickets in it. Because I wanted to tell them because it really just has like this nutty flavor to it. Like if you put not even any crunch to it. It really just kind of tastes like you're like, what is that nutty flavor? Is that sunflower seeds? Is that what? And then you would find a leg occasionally and you would think that I just brought in you. You know, toxic cookies. So yeah, I need to tell you, no, if you find anything, it's supposed to be in there. it's a cricket. But you barely notice that it's crickets. Sure. Yeah, so you barely noticed. The next thing that you will notice, like this one is one of the ones that I don't know if you're going to be on board with this, and they're calling it a barbecue split, a BBQ split. So Mama D's, which is one of the vendors that's going to be part of Midtown Global Market's experience. Midtown Global Market kind of rotates through some of the other restaurants that they have there. So what is in the barbecue split instead of a banana split? It's scoops of barbecue pulled pork, mac and cheese, and coleslaw served side by side with a pickles beer.
I would eat the pickle.
You'd eat
I love pickles. Too much.
Don't they have at the fair like a fried pickle basket somewhere?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See,
yeah.
I
you like the fried
pickle? I do like the fried pickle.
Yeah, so they have the fried pickle, so this is just kind of a split
this,
on that.
See, I would...
You would eat that.
I would split the barbecue split with somebody
else. Okay.
I wouldn't just have it by myself.
That is fair. And the last one that I wanted to bring up, and if there's anything that you guys want to talk about, this one I thought you think was fun, because this is just complete whimsy. So if you go by the rainbow ice cream booth in the grandstand, you can get a rainbow cloud roll. And inside a rainbow cloud roll, there's three scoops of ice cream sprinkled with fruity cereal. So basically Fruity Pebbles, but they didn't have the rights to that. So with fruity cereal and wrapped in a pillow of cotton candy. So it's hand rolled on site. And the ice cream choices include Superman, vanilla, strawberry, and chocolate.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's what I expect. Like, that's right. State fair level menu right there. Like, I couldn't even dreamt that up.
You know, sugar overload. I think you need to have six friends eat that.
But I was going to say, you know, if you were to say you're not going to have Martha's cookies, this will be the option that I would actually go towards.
Okay.
Just because it's like you said, it's the whimsical. This is why you go to the state fair. Because I'm assuming people go to the state fair, they have their state fair staples.
Like, right.
You're going to go get a, you know, foot-long hot dog. You're going to go get a corn dog. You're going to go get a cheese curd. You're going to go get your Martha's cookies. But what are those three things that you really just want to try
right.
with your friends and family? It's be like, we're not going to get 10 of these. We're going to get one, and we're all going to take a bite of it.
Right. I mean, and I did add that onto my list of something that I was willing to try this year. And there's just some other things that are just kind of interesting, like a messy Giuseppe, which is just a bunch of, like, seasoned ground beef and pork sauce. And just, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm on board with trying the messy. I do cheese courts every year. Let's do something else. Or, you know, O'Gara's new spin on tater tots, where they're putting, like, sauerkraut and a bunch of other stuff in them. You know, corned beef and sauerkraut in it. So, you know,
you
I do think it's...
Sauerkraut.
Yeah. So, I mean, what do you suggest? Like, I mean, obviously, if we're going to a place like the State Fair, we're going there for the pageantry of it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, now that we do have these additional options, and so for somebody who is so... educated like yourself, MJ, how do you enjoy some of these type of events? Or how do we go, well, I still want to feel like a person that's doing the good work of trying to be in mm-hmm. this framework, because I know, but I'm at the fair and I want to have a good time.
I probably would look at some of the other festivities going on at the fair aside from the food
like
scene.
Concerts
which
and
is,
stuff.
But okay, mm-hmm. so like when I look at this, I say as a food scientist and just probably as the perfectionist that I am, like it can be better.
Yes.
So one day, hopefully not too far from now, I hope that when you look at any of these meat options, that it's trademarked to some clean meat, clean protein company.
Okay.
And so what I mean by that for anybody who's not familiar with clean protein and clean meat is without the animal, imagine if you could, without causing harm to the animal, regenerate their tissue cells or muscle tissue so that you could 3D print or even just grow the muscle that you love and enjoy, that you see as meat. So Beyond Meat is a plant-based company, but Hampton Creek, which is now known as the company Just, has an awesome video out there. If you type in Ian the chicken, where Ian is this happy chicken walking around, where they took a swab of his skin cells and were able to grow his muscle tissue and enjoy chicken nuggets from Ian the chicken without causing the death of Ian.
See, that's the future.
And it's the future,
but that's also the present.
But don't some people, I know that you see some pushback every once in a while where people start going, okay, now we're to the Frankenfoods type thing. You know, like, should we do that? And when is science going too far? Like, when do we get to that Soylent Green thing?
I'm
like,
sorry. The stuff
we can't
that you're eating
it.
In Taco Bell, you think that's beef? You're already there. You just don't know about it. Right? It's like you're already there. The things you don't know about, you're already consuming. So when I literally tell you this is being processed in a can...
you're already eating, you've been eating that for the last 10 years of your life. Mm-hmm. And but they wrap it up in this goodness of Doritos Locos Tacos, which I actually had some last night because I want, and I'm very food conscious. Like I'm,
and you still ate it.
But I ate it because I wanted it.
Right.
Right, but I also knew exactly what was in it, and I was very conscious of the fact that I was going to consume that. And, but I also consume tons of other stuff, but to your point, is being educated about it and not being pissed off about. You can only control what you can control. So you can control what you can learn.
Mm-hmm.
So learn.
Yeah. So we're going to look up Ian the chicken and see about the happy life that he is having, because we are eating protein that is based from him, but not actually him. So we're going to go look for that. And what else do you encourage people? We'll send everybody to your website, MJ. But what is there anything else out there that you go, here's my starter lesson for everybody, for people out there. Here's something else you should watch. Just kind of start yourself on the journey.
Oh, that's a... Okay, so when I look at the future of the food industry, what I was getting at earlier is we're now in this area called functional foods.
Okay.
So when I say that everything on this menu could be made better, it's if we're concerned about sugar, well, we can create new ways to create sweetness that don't harm your body in the way that this so-called natural sugar does.
Because when you go to Hy-Vee now, there's even a sign up there that says functional foods.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. That's... Mm-hmm. See, functional foods also is kind of like a food science term, so I wouldn't expect.
Oh, good.
I wouldn't expect the consumer to be like familiar with what functional foods mean.
Yeah, I don't think they don't. Mm-hmm. Well, MJ, let's back up. They don't explain to us. There's no definition of it, but there is an aisle and there's a sign on the aisle that says functional foods, and so it does have some of the things that you seem to be explaining. And so it's good now to know what am I looking for if I see that terminology.
Right. So when you're looking at functional foods, you're looking at food as a way to deliver true nutrition to your body. So I am assuming that functional foods to Hy-Vee, what it means to us in the food science world is, let's take a look at the macronutrient story. Mm-hmm. When you look at a nutrition facts panel, you have your fats, your carbs, your protein. Let's look at those and see how they occur in that food product and what ratios. And right now, at least in the American diet, you know, there's definitely an emphasis on having more protein in your diet, maybe fewer carbohydrates. Now, that's a trend or a fad, or it works for a certain group of people. It doesn't mean that it's universal to everybody.
Right.
But functional foods could really deliver on a story like that and also be low in sugar. But I think if people are interested in clean meat or clean proteins, which are proteins and meat derived from working on a tissue engineering level, and I understand why it would appear like a frankenfood in the very beginning, but I think everyone starts there with anything new that they've learned.
Right.
As they become more educated, a great resource to educate on that topic would be Paul Shapiro's book, Clean Meat.
Okay.
And then... Ian the Chicken is a fabulous way to just get an introductory to that. That's somewhat entertaining and very, you know, heartwarming. In the plant-based space, I think that if people could turn off the negative energy toward the word vegan, myself included.
Okay.
Because the word vegan has caused a lot of people to turn the other way.
Right.
Maybe it's because of a very radical lifestyle.
Yes.
Or it could also just be because for as long as the term vegan has been used, the products on the market at that time did not exemplify amazing taste.
Right.
Or a taste that was equal.
I learned a lot today.
Right.
And just an FYI, and I should have touched on this earlier, but our festival, the Twin Cities Film Fest, focuses on a social justice cause every single year. We did addiction. We've done sex trafficking. We've done poverty and education. This year's animal humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're programming 5 to 7 films around animal humanity. That, of course, includes animal welfare, but how animals make us better human beings.
Right.
But that being said, there is a film that I think will be, again, I can't really tell what the film is right now because we haven't officially accepted it, but this filmmaker is going to get an acceptance letter very soon from us. But it deals with farming and sustainable farming, but that animals help us actually be better human beings through plant protein and how they're needed on these land to make sure that the plants are giving us what they need as well. So anyways.
So I'm very excited because I think this is a good tie-in, because what we can do is that we can go ahead and release that, and then we can have one of our reviewers of that film be MJ and tell us how does that tie back into how we are better for the planet and better as people.
I love it. I can't wait to see it.
Perfect.
I love stuff like that because... again, food science is so vast, and there is a category within food science called meat science, and I didn't get to learn very much about it. So it's interesting for anybody who wanted to go into the food science industry and create a change for plant proteins, there wasn't much of an opportunity to do it if you're not educated on meat.
Right.
You know?
We're also considering a film that is all about the history of organic food.
Ah.
Oh, wow. That's going to be one intensive research project. I can't wait. That's so cool.
How do you compile it into a, 68-70 minute documentary? We'll see.
Right. And we are definitely going to have you back on the show because there's so much we can cover. And as more interesting food topics come up, we would love to have you back, MJ. Is that okay?
Oh, I would love to be back. Yes,
so,
thank you.
Everyone, we encourage you to go to her website. It's fairscience.com, F-A-R-E, science.com, and read more of the great work and great lifestyle choices that MJ Kinney can help you be a part of.
Thank you.
And we always encourage you to go to our website because, Jayton, there's always fun stuff going on over at the Twin Cities Film Fest, so they should go there. And then when do tickets go on sale again for the festival?
So we're hoping to hit the ticket window around September 21st, 22nd. Our gala is coming up in a couple of weeks on September 6th, where we're honoring Steve Zahn at our gala. And the festival is in mid-October, October 17th. So right now there are sleepless nights and plenty of awesome food that helps me stay awake.
Well, we encourage you always to go into the Twin Cities Film Fest website. You can get more information at twincitiesfilmfest.org. You can find us online as well. We are very easy to find on Facebook. Just search for Be Our Geek on Facebook and Twitter. We thank you for listening to us, and we appreciate you being part of Be Our Geek because everyone is a geek about something.